Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda White, and I am here with Suzanne Wareye, who is an author, a podcaster, a sober influencer, all of the things.
All of the, that's just, it still doesn't, I'm like, what? Who? Me? No. that doesn't sound right. That can't
author
be right.
Of the new book, The Sober Shift. Very, very exciting. Mm-hmm. I got the privilege of reading it early, and it's incredible.
I know. You got to read it early, and I always want to give, like, so much gratitude and thanks to you because you might have been, like, the first one to read it, and then your feedback, I was like, okay, this is amazing. I, like, send it to my publisher immediately. I'm like, put this, like, you know, when you don't know what you're doing, which is me, like, all the time. Having someone like I've respected you for so long, having you read that and reading your words, I was just like, oh my God, like it meant a lot. Aww, so thank you.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. The feeling is mutual. What you've built
thank
is incredible. You. And we're going to actually get into OCD and alcohol's role in OCD.
Yes.
We've been talking about it a bit on the podcast, and I'm really excited to get into it. And we have a lot of parents that listen to this podcast, moms. And as a mom myself, I don't have OCD, but I've flirted with the line, especially when I had my daughter.
Yes. Yeah. I did not know I had OCD. Looking back, it makes sense. I definitely did. I think, you know, anytime we talk about OCD, it's always like, oh, I like things clean too. I like things organized. You're the therapist, so you know so much more about this. I'm pretty sure that's like OCPD maybe or something, right?
Yeah, it's more, it's called like just right OCD, where you're very into, and it's a subsection of just right OCD. Just right OCD can also be a pencil has to be straight on my desk or not straight. Like it can be your own thoughts of just what looks and feels right to you. And yeah, that could be keeping things organized or straight or things like that. Or it can be if you, what you were talking about for people listening, OCPD is obsessive compulsive personality disorder, which is distinct from OCD.
Got it. Yeah, because, you know, people will be like, oh my God, yeah, I like to have my pantry clean. I have OCD. And like those of us like with OCD, oh my God, you like, okay. So I first really felt OCD very intensely after the birth of my oldest. She's now 11. You know, and my pregnancy was like very high stress and like really just stressed out and scared, right? That's how I just looked at it. Like, oh, I'm high anxiety and I'm just scared. I'm worrying. But I didn't know about OCD or label it. It was January 4th and she was sitting in her high chair and I was peeling a pear, like with a paring knife. And mine was always like, what's the worst that could happen, right? And it was always up until that point, the worst that could happen was something would happen to her. I mean, she would die in her sleep. I would trip down the stairs and drop her. I would accidentally do something, right? And so then I was very vigilant to make sure that didn't happen. But this day, it was, oh, no, that's not the worst that could happen. The worst that could happen is you do it. And from that moment, I was shattered, shattered. It's hard to explain OCD if your brain doesn't work like that. And I think at first I was like, well, I don't want to do that. So that's not going to happen. Thinking that the thought would just go away, right? Like thoughts do all the time. We have crazy thoughts all the time. And the thought would never go away. It would haunt me for the next year and a half. I was terrified. I was convinced that this thing was going to happen. So much so that I, you know, could see the ambulances outside of our house in my mind. I could, as I was reading her books, because I was so also like so careful to like make sure I was still connecting with her and like over the top and being like, I'm making eye contact with you. I'm reading books to you. I'm snuggling with you. See, like, I'm your mom. Like, I love you more than anything, right? Like, I didn't want, I wanted to make sure that connection was still there. And I think it was. I do think it was. But inside, every waking moment was that thought, taunting and taunting and taunting. And it would be like, well, you got to make sure it's not going to happen, right? So you got to test yourself. And that thought, well, how do I test myself? What if I do test myself? It was just constant. And it was, you know, I tried to say it to my mom and my husband. And, you know, my mom's a therapist, but she didn't know much about OCD.
A lot of therapists do not know very much about OCD at all. It is very neglected in our training.
Yes. And so she kind of normalized it, mm-hmm. right? Like, oh, yeah, we all have those thoughts, right? And so then I was like, okay, but – and that was early on. I'm like, but this feels different. This – like I am – it was daily panic attacks. It just felt like this foregone conclusion that I didn't want to have happen, but it was going to – it made me doubt myself. It made me like, What is going on? We, you know, I would have my husband take the knives and I would tell him, it's very scary to tell someone when you have OCD and you were very, like, I was on guard to see his reaction. Like, if he at all got scared,
yeah,
then it's like, oh, I am a threat, right? Oh my God, he is afraid. I'm going to do it. Oh my God, I could do it. He does think I could do it. That means I could do it. And so I would really try to like tiptoe into it. Like, hey, I'm afraid of these knives, these big knives. I can't stop thinking about them and what could happen. And so he's like, okay, let's get rid of the knives.
Yeah.
Well, that means the knives are a threat.
What other things, Suzanne, did you do to test yourself? Like before it got to the point of like telling him and moving the knives?
I didn't test myself. That thought of testing myself became almost as scary as doing the thing.
Okay.
So the testing almost became like, you need to do it. No, you can't do it. Because testing to me meant putting the knife to where I was afraid it would go.
Got it.
That was the test in my brain. That was me saying, I'm going to get as close to doing it so that I can prove to myself I don't want to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And you didn't trust yourself.
Yeah. Oh, no trust.
I mean, I don't have OCD and I would never do that either because it is scary.
Right. Right. And my brain had me convinced if you don't trust yourself enough to do that, you're a threat. It's so hard to explain like this prison. Oh, man. And so I was just constantly battling. I had my compulsions were also like mental.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to get into of just I think that people don't realize how many compulsions are mental and
yes.
what that looks like. And I also think it's really relevant for people because there is this line with anxiety to OCD where there is a lot of overlap.
Yep.
And people with anxiety also do mental compulsions and they don't realize they're doing mental compulsions and it makes their anxiety worse too.
Yes. Yes. And it's such a great way to hide it. Mm-hmm.
Yes. No, no one knows.
No one knows. And no one knew. Like my best friend didn't know. Because are you kidding me? I'm not going to say this out loud. I'm not going to. I would be locked up, right? In my mind, I would be taken away from my daughter. And so, yeah, my mental compulsions were like song lyrics. One was Old Before Your Time by mm-hmm. Ray LaMontagne. And it was, you're learning, you're deserving of love and a peaceful heart. And I just said that over and over. And over so that like no other thought could get in. It was Bible verses, which I hadn't been religious since college. And I would read the Bible like looking for this sign that there was hope. And yeah, we would get rid of knives. He got rid of the big knives, but then the little knives got scary. Mm-hmm. He got rid of the silver knives because those were scary. But then the black ones were scary too, right? Yeah. And then the steak knives started to be scary. And it was the hardest thing I'd ever gone through, ever, ever, ever in my whole life. And finally I got, it was like March. So it was like a year and 3 months. And I was like, I had the best idea ever. Like it hit me that I was like, oh, I got it. Like I'll just get rid of me. Like if it's her or me, I mean, that's an easy, and it felt like the best idea I had had since this whole thing started. It felt like, obviously this is, yes. it felt like such a relief of like, oh my God, I finally have a solution. And it made all the sense in the world. And I was like, yes, that's it. Thankfully, I also had the wherewithal to say like, I don't think this is supposed to feel like a relief. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is supposed to feel like, I think something's really fucked up right now. And that night I just called my mom crying and I was like, I need help. It's really bad. And I just can't do it anymore. And I told my husband, and it's so scary. It's just so scary to be having these thoughts and that you've protected. And just when all of your day is just trying not to have these thoughts, to like speak them is the scariest thing for someone with OCD. But they swooped in and then they got me help and I was able to say it mm-hmm. out loud. And she's the therapist and then the psychiatrist. And she was like, oh, this is OCD. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hold on, what? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, but aren't you worried? I'm bad, obviously. Like, I'm a threat to my daughter. She was like, no. She's like, the fact that you are as torn up about this, the fact that you've been living in hell because of this thought, shows me that you're not going to do anything. Like, that you're not a threat. That this isn't you. This isn't what you want. And I think just hearing that, that I wasn't a threat to the person I loved most in the world, right? And then my psychiatrist was like, you know, OCD is easily treated. And I remember her saying this, and I came back to it so much. And she was like, it's a switch in your brain, mm-hmm. and we just got to switch it. We just got to flip it. And, you know, I was still doing therapy and doing all that, but I did need more. And she was like, we'll flip it. And like, you're okay. And I like going through that entire thing, you know, people ask me about my books about alcohol and mm-hmm. sobriety. People say like, how did alcohol, like, how were you drinking in motherhood and how did motherhood affect your drinking? Because of my past of turning to alcohol and being a party girl, mm-hmm. like, Amanda, I would have been right there with you in all of your pictures. In all of your pictures you're posting, we would have been like just thick as thieves. Because of that, I think I would have gone down a dark path with drinking and motherhood. And because of this OCD thing that kind of came in and just rocked me, alcohol, like, what wasn't a part of it. It couldn't be. Mm-hmm. It literally couldn't be. And I totally know how some people hear this and was like, well, of course, but alcohol could have also swooped in and helped you not think, right? And helped you turn your brain off. And I think some people do, you know, with OCD, it is a tool like that. I mean, a destructive one. But that wasn't my story. And I look back, it's so incredible to be able to look back and be thankful for this time and really the gift of perspective that OCD has given me, because I leaned on that in early sobriety to know that, like, I know my brain is wrong. Mm-hmm. I know I can't count on my thoughts mm-hmm. to tell me the truth.
Yeah.
I know I have thought the most insane things, and I know how my brain can fuck shit up. And so I think having that perspective in early sobriety, when our brains do get in the way of so much and we doubt and we fear and we try to guess how it's going to go and we all of the stuff that are, you know, and we think that it's either predictive or, you know, that it's telling the truth, the role that my OCD has played in my sobriety is like, I with 100% it's a superpower mm-hmm. for me.
Yeah.
For me. And I would have never said that when I was like in the depths of it.
Yeah. I think that's so fascinating because I kind of feel like the inverse sort of happened to me. Again, I don't have OCD, but when I was trying to stop drinking alcohol, I did trust my brain, right? So I didn't have a concrete awareness that I wasn't my thoughts. Then when I got pregnant, I had really intense, intrusive thoughts, suicidal thoughts when I was pregnant. And I was so grateful to be sober and had known that, so that I was able to say, no, just because my brain is thinking this doesn't mean it's correct. Or when I went through, you know, postpartum anxiety, like I'm sure most parents do on some level, you know, and I had a traumatic birth, so I was extremely anxious. I'm just fascinated by the line between anxiety and other mental health and where it starts to become OCD sort of versus not.
Yeah, where is that? Because I did just always think it was anxiety.
Yeah.
I just always thought I had anxiety. Even I thought it was just, okay, I have postpartum anxiety. Like that is like, you know, yeah, where do you think that is? Like what makes it OCD?
I think when it starts to come into compulsions that you can't control. Like I think the way you described it was postpartum anxiety. And then when you talk about that one day when you were peeling a pear.
Yeah.
Because I've thought before, like, what if I harm? Like my big thing was like, I'm going to drop her down the stairs. Like a lot of those things you were talking about. And I remember I'm not the most like, I'm like clumsy kind of, and I'm not super always like aware. Right.
Yes.
So
yes,
I was very scared that I would fall with her or drop her or.
Like you go from one day being clumsy and like, okay, you could be clumsy to then like overnight, if you're clumsy, now I could, that means my daughter's life could end, right?
Right. And it's not even about like I feel very similar to you as like obviously the worst thing that could ever happen would be something happening to her. But I struggled way more with it would be my fault.
Yes.
Even when I was pregnant and stuff, it was like I won't be able to live with myself if this is my fault that this happens. Even weirdly sometimes, and I think it hasn't become an OCD for me because I'm not doing compulsions and things like that. But even this is super weird. I mean, my daughter's 2.5, but she gets these like chronic, not, I don't know if I would call it an eye infection, but she just has styes on her eyes a lot because she just like plays hard and she's like always like has sand in her eye and like is rubbing it. And we're always like, is this pink eye again? Is this just a stye?
Oh my God, we have pink eye ointment and stuff. We have like four things of it just because kids are like disgusting. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And then it's like, it's not even about like, I don't want that to happen, but it's like, is she going to grow up and it's going to be like my fault that she's like blind in one eye? Because I didn't take her to urgent care the one time.
Yes. Yes. It's that notion that it's like this unforgiving thing, right? I do, at least for me, that was like the first kid. I mean, apart from the OCD stuff, even after, I just didn't know how forgiving motherhood was. And it did feel like everything felt important and like life-changing for her. And then I guess I remember getting this, like, it's my favorite piece of parenting advice that I ever got. My friend was going to have her fourth baby. And I was pregnant, I think, with my second. I have three kids. And I was like, oh my God, like, how do you do it? Like, how? Yeah. And she just seemed so, I mean, I don't want to say relaxed because that would, but just like roll with it, right? And I was like, how do you do four? And she was like, you just care less. And she goes, you don't love less, but you care less. And that to me, I was like, that's it. That is it. And now that I have three, I'm like, yes. And it's not like we care less about them, but it is a thing that it's like, okay, making room for that forgiveness in there. Of like, I might be screwing some stuff up, but like kids are meant to survive. Babies are meant to survive. Right. And being like, yeah, they actually, they're okay. Like they can go play on the tree swing. And even if I'm like, oh my God, you get, but they're okay. You know, all of that. That's so hard. Like how do you not be anxious? Right.
Well, I think too, and I'm interested in your opinion about this because I talk a lot about just like intensive parenting, you know, in this day and age and stuff. And I think that's one thing that I didn't. I remember before I had kids, I would like look at people who are super anxious and I was just like, just, you know, you got to let them be. Kids just, are like, kids. Just settle down. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Yes.
And then you don't understand when you have, I mean, it starts the second you're pregnant. You're like assaulted now on TikTok with like, every possible thing that you need to be doing and all the expectations, and everything is so black and white. It's like you're a terrible person if you're taking Tylenol during pregnancy and you're going to ruin your kid, or, you know, the opposite of that. So it's just like there's no nuance. And I think that's one of the big issues that I didn't realize until I became a parent of, even if you try to tune it out, unless you're not on social media at all, you are going to be exposed to that. And it is really hard as a, like, compared to, I think, parents, you know, a generation ago. There's so much more to worry about because there's so much more that people have told us online to worry about.
Totally. And there's so much more comparison. Like, I know my parents were like, oh, I wonder what, you know, Johnny's parents do with their kids. Like, they weren't thinking about, like, they weren't comparing themselves to other parents because they weren't seeing how other parents parent online, which the way people parent online is not how they parent in real life. Yeah, I have leaned into, my best friend Katie taught me this phrase. She had kids before I did, and I have always admired just kind of how she did it. Like, she didn't fall into that, like, yeah, that intense thing. And she says, like, yeah, but benign neglect, right? And that, like, I am like, yep. It's benign neglect. Like, it is, I don't entertain my kids. Like, I'm not like a babysitter. I am here. If they, you know, have someone being mean to them at school, I will sing them songs every night. I will snuggle with them. But I'm not here to, like, make them have no bumps in the road or, yeah. And that's also a hard thing to do as a mom. Yeah, I think, man, just the pressure put on moms, we just have to do less. That's why it's half-ass whole heart over here. Like, that is, like, how I will love you unconditionally. I will allow you to make mistakes. I will love you through your mistakes. I will give you so much grace and compassion, and let's talk about feelings and all that. But, like, if you forget your water bottle, you're on your own. You know, like, I'm not going to drive it to you. You can use the bubbler. That's what we called it in Wisconsin, and it's fine.
I like that. Yeah, I think it is an interesting challenge of having one child, of because you can do so much, it, like, takes a lot of restraint. And I kind of do it in my head of, like, well, my business is my other child, so I also need to prioritize that, and I may not be around because that's what I have to do.
It doesn't have to be another child. It's just something that's taking your time that you care about, right? Yeah. And that you love and that you're nurturing. And there's also, it comes with age as she gets older too. And you see the way that she bounces back from stuff.
No, one of the best things that happened to us, like, early-ish on, is she fell off of her changing table, and it was like the scariest moment. I thought she was dead. We were like, are we going to call it? Like, we were ready to call an ambulance, and there was not a scratch.
Yes.
There wasn't even a bruise on her head. Like, she was completely fine. I was like, oh, okay, she's not going to die.
We're not just, like, a razor's edge away from catastrophe and death. And it can feel like that.
Especially with sleeping. I had so much anxiety about sleeping. And
okay, about her sleeping?
Yeah. About just, like, SIDS and everything like that. And I have a good friend whose child did die of SIDS. So that made me, like, an insane person. But yeah, it's so hard.
It's just so hard. And tying it back to alcohol, like, this is why moms drink. We don't drink because we don't care.
Yeah.
We drink because we care so damn much. And the thing about alcohol, and that's what I do write about in the book, is it's like, we actually do need help as moms. Systemically, we need more help. We need more support. There's just, the list goes on and on. And the thing about alcohol that we're turning to in order, because we care so much, is it makes us careless. Yes. It makes us not, like, it takes away who we are as moms. It numbs that. My story is that I nursed my last baby in a blackout the last time I drank, right? And that is dangerous. I was putting him in a dangerous position, and I just would not have done that. That's not who I am as a mom, right? alcohol made me careless. And so it's just, I just always have so much compassion for, I mean, women, but moms. Moms in particular are, especially like post-pandemic, when we were expected to just do everything, like do it all while worrying also how do we keep our kids safe from this thing that we're all afraid of. So it's just, it's a lot.
Okay, so if you're listening to this episode and feeling like, oh my gosh, I could actually really use a therapist, we've got you. My practice, Therapy for Women Center, has therapists licensed in 43 states across the country. All the therapists are hired by me, trained by me, handpicked by me, and we really back and support our therapists. We vouch for them, unlike some of these big online therapy platforms. Also, if you're local to the Philadelphia area, we have 3 office locations there. So I would love for you to go to our website, therapyforwomencenter.com, and check it out. How did you get to the point, Susanna, of in like your OCD recovery of being ready to have kids again? You must have been afraid to do it.
You know what's interesting is before I got help for it, I got pregnant. Mm-hmm. And immediately the intrusive thoughts, they were there, but it wasn't stuck as much as it was. So something hormonally was going on and I could feel it. And I was like, oh my God, this is okay. I think that this feels better. That ended up, I ended up losing that pregnancy very early. And I felt when it happened and I was going into the doctor because it was like a rush. I hadn't had them for like 2 weeks and I was like, this is great. And I can remember where I was standing in my kitchen when it was like deluge coming running back. And then there it was again. And because I would like test it, I would like think of the thought and I would be like, oh my God, it's kind of just amorphous and like not, it's not haunting me. And man, it came rushing back. And so then I was desperate to get pregnant again. Because this is before, you know, I was like open to medication. I was afraid of medication and I was just afraid of it. And yeah, so then I was like desperate to get pregnant, like my life depended on it because it felt like it did. And we didn't. And then I ended up getting help before we got pregnant again. And then it felt like, oh, okay, now I can just have another baby when it's time. You know, the interesting thing was I did think it was like postpartum OCD for a lot of those times. And I have 3 kids. So I was like always postpartum. And they're like 2.5 years apart. And so I kind of assumed, and I stayed on the meds through my second and third pregnancies and everything. They are healthy, wonderful kids. And so then I was sober, right? And so I was like not feeling anxiety. I was in a low dose anyway. And he was 2. And I was like, you know, I think it's time just to like, I think that, you know, the meds served me well. And like, I just don't think I need them anymore. And I stopped. Mm-hmm. And within like 1 week, probably, they came rushing back. It wasn't a knife this time. It was a hammer. And I was picking him up from preschool and signing him out. And it was, I remember my thoughts being, oh my God, it's only Tuesday. How am I going to get through this life? And immediately it happened that quickly that then I was like questioning my life again.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's it. Like, this is just plain old OCD and I will be on meds forever and that's okay.
It is so interesting, that line.
Yeah. And just like how I do think because of the OCD, I'm like super aware, right? And so that I could like, I am just aware of my thoughts and kind of I have a vigilance about my thoughts and are they skewed and what's going on. And so I was able to like catch it quickly to be like, oh, yeah, here we go again.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I totally agree with you also about parenting and alcohol and motherhood. I mean, I think I feel very privileged that I got sober when I did, because the most recently triggered I've been to drink has been during motherhood. You know, I didn't experience triggers for a really long time and I've had thoughts of like, I get why people drink. I get why, like, you know, taking the edge off sounds great. at the end of the day. And it is because there's a lot of mental load. There's a lot of things to worry about. It's hard to wind down at the end of the day. But yeah, you have to always be thinking about, right? It feels temporarily better. And then it makes it so much worse. It is like OCD in that way, right? Like it feels better to do a compulsion, but then you need more and more and more to be sustainable.
Totally. Like the parallels there, that's tolerance, right? You're going to need more and more of this thing in order to make it work. And the compulsions, it's the same. Like whatever you're doing, you are like, okay, if you check this, you know, my brother has OCD too, and his compulsion is like a checking kind of thing. You're going to have to do that more and more in order to satisfy this thing that you get a very, very short amount of time of relief, right? It's not sustainable. And yeah, it's, you know, as mothers, it feels impossible then to say like, well, actually, I need to take care of me first. I need to quit drinking. I'm not going to ask my husband's opinion or my partner's opinion. I'm doing this for me. That feels, because of the relentlessness of everybody needing you, it feels impossible to say like, actually, guys, I'm here and like, I'm a full person. Mm-hmm. Like I'm a full person with needs, and that didn't stop when you came into the world. Like yes, I'm your mom, but I'm also me. And I'm still here. And that's what I had to do, like to quit drinking. That's what moms have to do. We have to, and it feels uncomfortable. It feels uncomfortable. It feels wrong. It feels scary to say like, actually, you guys are going to have to figure that out because I got to figure this out. Mm-hmm. Whatever that means. For me, like that was like, talk about benign neglect. It was like one AirPod in. And I had like a 5-year-old, a 2.5-year-old, and a 3-month-old. And I was like, you guys are on your own. I'll be up here doing laundry and listening to Quitlet and trying to figure this thing out, right? It was like more screen time. It was whatever I had to do just to like figure this out, because that had to be the most important thing.
I also wanted to ask you, your husband recently stopped drinking. Tell me more about that.
Because this is so wild. So like I said, when I quit drinking, I didn't ask him like, hey, do you want to do it with me? I was just like, I don't even think it occurred to me to ask him, which is so weird as a wife, right? It's weird just to that was kind of a singular moment for me in just being like, no, this is mine. Like, it doesn't have to be yours, but it's mine. And I'm not asking for input here. Like, this is too precious to me. And he continued to drink. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't – I don't think I've ever seen my husband drunk. He had his party days.
Yep.
He's 14 years older than I am. But that doesn't mean he's more mature, just for the just for the record. They just never grow up. But yeah, his drinking was like more habitual with golf, you know, every Friday with the guys. And I was so focused on me and like what I was doing, what I was learning. I don't really remember him for the first like 6 months. I mean, he was there, mm-hmm. and I love him dearly. But I was just so like myopically like, yes, just focused on this thing I was doing. So when then around 6 months, when I was like, oh, hey, mm-hmm. I forgot, how's it going? You're here too. I really started to see like, what didn't I like about his drinking? What didn't feel good to me?
Yeah.
Right? Like, and all of the boundary stuff that we talk about. And I did, like, I set some boundaries with him. My husband is, if you're listening to this and you're thinking like my partner would never do that, like that's my husband, right? He's a very much like, you can't tell me what to do kind of guy, right? And I wasn't trying to tell him what to do. It was more of like, hey, this is what I need. I love you. You love me. And in order to love me, this is what I need. And it was very specific. Like if you have more than 2 beers, I don't like it. 2 beers, I'm like, okay, you know, 3, 4, I don't like it. It feels unsafe. I feel like, you know, maybe there's an edge, or it's more unpredictable. And so he stayed with that for most, you know, it wasn't perfect, but we worked through it, just continued to communicate. Oh, and one thing that I did that I think is important is just I never wanted to put him in a position to have to defend alcohol.
Yeah.
So I was never, and it was so hard not to point out
shit
and be like, yeah, you feel crappy, don't you? Because you drank us. Like, are you connecting these,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Like, oh, I had to bite my tongue and just be like, let him figure it out. Like, he knows. Yeah. I just didn't want him to have to dig in his heels and be like, no, I feel fine. Like, it wasn't that bad. I didn't want that. And so I just didn't say, I would share with him everything I was learning and kind of influence in that way. And then he also saw that it was pretty good. I was sleeping. My mood was better. I was just more stable, consistent.
Yeah.
Like, it was just it was a happier home, really. And yeah. And then last April, he was like, I'm going to go a year. And I was like, inside, I was like, oh, yeah, cool. No problem, bro.
Yeah.
But inside, I was like, what? And yeah, he went a year. And he just kept being like, oh, my God, I feel amazing. This is amazing. You know, he was a little bit uncomfortable in those, like, first couple of months where he's like, his buddies are like, why aren't you drinking? The way he said it, I thought was brilliant. He said, I've committed to a year without alcohol. And when you say I've committed, they're only going to argue with you if they're an asshole, right? They're not going to be like, nah, what's a commitment to yourself, right? And so it kind of shut it down. And he was like, yeah, he's also very headstrong. And he's like, not going to be swayed by peer pressure much. Like, that's just the kind of guy he is. And so, yeah. And then as it approached 1 year, and he just was like, oh my God, I can't imagine drinking, and I feel so much better, and I can't believe I didn't stop earlier, and all of this stuff. And as he was approaching a year, he's like, I feel like I will just have like one more, like, I don't know, night to just go all out. And I was like, okay, just don't, you know, this is like the hardest thing I've ever done. Yeah. Is not to be like, hey, so what are you thinking? What are we, no, don't do it. You know, I was just like, okay. He kept saying that, and he just never did it. He said he was going to do it at a year, and then he never did it. And then he kept saying it again. And finally, we were in New Orleans, and all of our friends were drinking. And, like, a few of them were really in their cups, you know? And he was like, yeah, I'm never drinking again. And I'm like, I know. You know? Like, he kind of just got to see it up close, really. And then at that point, it had been maybe like 14 months or something. Like, he was just kind of like, okay, I think I've just been saying that, you know, it's a way to not say forever, which I totally got. And I was like, yeah, I get it. And yeah, so now he's, you know, he's 59 and he's like in the best shape of his life, which is annoying. And I thought that I would be like the young, you know, like hot wife for a while. And now I'm like, wait, God, you just quit drinking and then start working out more. And then you're just all of a sudden in the best shape of your life. Great. No, but he's like, yeah, he loves it and he's thriving. And I know.
My husband also quit drinking.
Really?
Yeah, a year ago, which is shocking.
Oh, my God. Oh, how did it come about?
I wouldn't say he never had a problem or anything, but he was someone who would get drunk like once in a while, and I didn't like that, and we would get into fights about it because I would just be like, I want nothing to do with this. Like, that's your, like, especially it would be, you know, if he's with friends or something, like, I don't care. But I get really mad about when people like tell me they're gonna do something and they don't do it. And when you're drunk, right, you're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna come home soon, I'm gonna come home in an hour.
Yes.
So we would get into fights about that. Yep. Because I would just be like, don't tell me when you're coming home if you don't know, because I'm going to stay up all night. Like, I don't know. I have anxiety sometimes about, like, I think just everything I went through with, like, drinking, of, like, how close I was to death when I look at it so many times. I'm like, this is dangerous. But – and then, yeah, he went through some family stuff that, like, wasn't great, that made him start therapy, which was really good. And then he kind of – I think he did a sober October.
Yeah.
Maybe a sober September. I don't know. He was fishing. He's very into fishing. And he's kind of becoming a parent, realized, like, if I'm going to have a hobby, I want to dedicate my time to fishing. I don't want to waste it on drinking as much. And he was like sober on a fishing trip for a while. And he was just like, I think I'm going to take, you know, the rest of September off. And then I think he was like, I'll do a sober October. And then a lot of my really good friends are sober. So we went on vacation with them in like December, and he had so much fun on vacation. And he was like, wow, I didn't realize I could like go on vacation and not drink. And he just kind of kept doing it. And yeah, I think he's had moments for sure where he's been able to be like, oh, if I was drinking right now, I would have like drank to numb this. I would have drank to deal with the stress of that. And while this like sucks in the moment, I would rather do it. And I mean, obviously it's very helpful having me be the
I know. I can imagine. The one. That's it. Yeah.
But yeah, it's something I never thought, never expected would happen. And it has been a very positive development in my own life.
I love it. Isn't it amazing?
It's amazing. Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing when you think about how we are the influencer in our home, like the silent influence, right? Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say I'm silent, but I'm very opinionated.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, same. But you know what I mean? Like that maybe this steady influence.
Yeah.
Maybe just this like consistent influence. Yeah, that just like showing up consistently and as a mom and being able to like parent sober and not feeling like shit in the morning and just like continually showing up. I mean, there is, I feel like, something that happens. Also, I do think, and this is maybe I'm generalizing, but I don't know. I don't really care. But I think that it often falls on, if you're in a heterosexual relationship, I do think it falls on the woman to like maybe be the one to start this thing. And not saying that your partner is definitely going to follow, but waiting for him. If you're in a heterosexual relationship, I think waiting for him to stop or to be ready to stop, if you're waiting for him in order to feel ready.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, I don't think that's the right. I just don't think it's going to happen then. Yeah. I think that we start. I mean, yeah, I think that we start it and then they, you know, follow suit or don't. But yeah, don't wait.
Yeah. Well, Suzanne, thank you for sharing vulnerably and authentically. Mm. I think a lot of people are going to connect to your story. Tell us a little bit more about your book.
Oh my gosh. The book, The Sober Shift. It is, you know, we kind of just like, I always say we, it's like the universal we. We just like blow it up and burn it down. So in the first half of the book, I really do dismantle just like what you thought you know about alcohol, what you've wanted it to be. I just tear it down. And each chapter is a shift from the old way of thinking about it to a new way of thinking about it. And then the second half of the book, I help you build. And it is about like the abundance of sobriety and the privilege of being sober and not having alcohol come in and wreck anything anymore. And at the end of each chapter, it's called Now It's Your Turn. And so, you know, I give you a chance. It's like, okay, so let's look at what you're going through and what's in your life. And you can kind of reflect on that. It's my stories. It's a lot of stories that I've never told before. And then I'm just always so honored that some of the ladies who I know and I'm friends with and are in the cafe, they lent their stories to this book too. Because I think that we all felt like we were alone, that everyone else had this drinking thing figured out, and we were the only ones being like, okay, I guess it's user error, and I just have to do it better, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I wanted to include as many women's stories in there as I could who, from the outside, they didn't lose anything to alcohol, right? But on the inside, it's a completely different story. And so, yeah, I love their stories. And it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy that it's out. I'm just trying to hold on. And I'm grateful and honored that I get to talk about it with you.
Yeah. Well, I will tell everyone, you are just like, you're such a good example of, you didn't lose anything. It was not anything that you could see on paper. And as a result, I think you bring such a unique perspective to choosing sobriety, making sobriety cool, influencing people for sobriety. You've influenced me to make my bed every morning.
Okay, isn't it good? It's good, right?
Now. I love it.
I know. I do too.
It took me a really long time to get there, though.
I mean, it took me like 45 years. Because I was like, come on, we don't have to make it. We're just going to get into it again.
Yeah.
But it's for
it makes
anxiety.
Me go to sleep better.
Yes.
Because I really love looking at my bed and undoing my bed and all of that.
And then having those like covers just waiting for you, like you could just tuck yourself in there like a little sardine.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my gosh. So, well, thank you. Of course. I adore you.
I adore you as well. And yeah, if anyone wants to, the book is called The Sober Shift. They can get it Amazon, everywhere books are sold.
You can get it everywhere. And I read the audiobook too.
Amazing.
And so you'll
hear. Did I tell you they I tried to read my own audiobook. I had to audition and they told me I couldn't do it.
That is so wild. Isn't that wild? Yeah. You're like, you
did
guys.
You have to audition?
No, probably because I already had the podcast. That's the only thing
I'm
thinking.
That's true. I didn't have a podcast when I did mine. So that must – when they asked me for an audio sample, I had to like do it into my phone. And
oh, no. That's impossible.
My book also has a lot of dialogue. And they were like, we need an actor to bring this dialogue.
Like – go right ahead. Yeah, dialogue's so hard. Mine does not have a lot of dialogue. But that was an experience.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
And then if people want to follow you online.
Yeah, come to I'm Suzanne Wareye on Instagram. And then it's SuzanneWareye.com online. And yeah, we have the Sober Mom Life Cafe. I have the Sober Podcast. What do I have? The Sober Podcast? No, the Sober Mom Life Podcast. Wow. It's just good. Now it's just called The Sober Podcast. Yeah, I'm all over the place, guys. You're going to be sick of me. It's fine.
All right. Bye, Suzanne.
Bye. Thank you.